Yes, it's on now. Okay. I'll put that the slide back up at the very end just so y'all could see kind of where we've been versus where we're going. Some of you already have them, but in the back, there are two packets. Well, one packet and one printout. The packet back there that's stapled together is everything we've gone up over this class up until this point. And so I have those for you. And then the one next to it, just a single piece, that's tonight's class that we'll get through and hopefully finish before Wednesday night. So if you don't have those, you can either get up and get them now, or you could wait until the end of class and just grab them. But those are back there for you. And if there aren't enough, I'll print some more off. And I'm just going to, from now on, if you want them, don't feel like you have to take them. I'm going to have a handout in the back of the PowerPoints for whatever we're going over that night. And so if you just want to get used to walking back there and grabbing yourself a copy, I should have them ready before each class. Just to catch us up with what we've been doing in this idea of finding my faith, before our faith can become our own, we first have to understand where our faith comes from. And that's really been the first half of this class, is recognizing the Bible, figuring out what the Bible is, how it's made up, understanding what's in the Bible, and understanding the purpose of Scriptures on what God is trying to tell us. And so what we are doing tonight is we are finishing up the question you see on the screen, why do we need a New Testament? We spent some time kind of getting to that point, just looking at what a covenant is, the plan that God had through Scripture. Well, why did we need a new when there was already something in place? We'll finish that up tonight, and then we'll get into, and hopefully finish as well, the question of, now that we have the new, what happens to the old? And why did we even keep it? Why is it still there? And that will kind of conclude this first half of the series for us this evening. So, we looked at how, and I'm just going to go through these really fast, and again, you have these in the handout, and this is stuff we already went over on Wednesday. This is just to catch us all back up. But we looked at how we ask questions when there is something that's old versus something that's new. We might ask ourselves questions like, well, what was wrong with the old for there to be, for there to even be a new? Why did we need a New Testament? Was the old broken? Was it not working? Was it imperfect? So those are some of the questions a lot of people have asked and continue to ask in studying the Scriptures. We looked at what a testament actually is. We've been defining a testament as we look at the Old versus the New Testament as a promise or as a covenant. And we remember we took that time to look at the three different time periods of Scripture, the patriarchs, the Mosaic, and the Christian time period, and look at how each time period promises covenants were made between God and His people. Dwight even talked about it a little bit this morning in his Lord's Supper talk. There are more covenants than just the big ones we've looked at between God and Abraham, God and Moses and the children of Israel, and then God and Christ and us. There are tons of covenants God makes with His people. Those are just the main ones that you see throughout all of Scripture. But they're a promise. It's a covenant. We looked at how God made covenants in the patriarchal system. God made promises or a covenant to the children of Israel under the law of Moses. And then we looked at some of these myths that some people have with the Old Testament. And these are some of the myths we are trying to debunk. The Old Testament is flawed. That's why we need a new. If Jesus was the ultimate plan from the beginning, then of course the Old Testament was doomed to fail. Why put something in place if we knew that wasn't the answer to begin with? The Old Testament was incomplete and it's imperfect, and that's why something new was needed. And we kind of looked at how, hopefully, we all know the end game. We all know that these aren't the case. These are myths. But how do we kind of come to that conclusion? And we said, if we believe any of these to be true, then we have to assume the same can be said about the New Testament. The New Testament is flawed. The New Testament is doomed to fail. The New Testament, is there something coming later? Something coming after, if it's imperfect or incomplete? And so, how do we justify some of these myths? How do we prove some of these myths? And those are some of the things we've been going over. We looked at how what was wrong with the Old Testament. In short, really, nothing was wrong. But we'll look at what was wrong and why there was a new. There was two purposes for the Old Testament. One, to reestablish the covenant made with Abraham and made with the great seed, land, and nation, that God was fulfilling those promises in the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, through the people of Moses. But it was also to teach the children of Israel, to teach them several things about who God was, as we'll look at more tonight, and what God was able to do for his children and how God takes care of his people. We looked at how law comes from the Hebrew word that means to throw or to shoot, but more importantly, that you're aiming in a certain direction. And so the idea that there was a law given means to point or to guide, to instruct and to teach. That the old law was there and put in place to help teach these people and push them in a direction. And really, we know what that direction is because we're on this side of the law. Where was God trying to push these people? Or to point these people? Who was he guiding them to? The Messiah. And Messiah, messianic language, is all throughout the Old Testament, because we can go back to Isaiah and read about the suffering servant, and God was trying to show them this, under the old law, we're still pushing towards someone greater than this. And those clues are all throughout the Old Testament, but it was to instruct and to point and to guide in their certain direction. So through the Old Testament, we have the children of Israel being taught about sacrifice, about worship, love, obedience, about holy living, and that's leading them towards Christ. We then looked at how the Old Testament was not imperfect or incomplete, but it was a building block for what's to come. The Old Covenant was broken, however, just not the way we think. And this is about where we left off on Wednesday night this past week. And we looked at how in Jeremiah and in Hebrews chapter 8, that both of those, the old and the new, suggest that the law was broken, but not how we think of. That is, someone want to go check and make sure everything's okay back there? Okay. It was broken, just not the way that we think of as a law being broken. How was the old covenant broken? Was it imperfect? Was it incomplete? Or what, according to the biblical writers, what was broken about this law? Okay. You had the people breaking it. They weren't keeping the law. And where we kind of left off with this discussion on Wednesday night was this idea of, well, what happened to the Old Testament people? There are some of those passages in Hebrews that it did not perfect the people. That is, their sins were not forgiven if they couldn't be made perfect. Some of us were discussing in the back, and I had heard this long ago, and it was someone reminded me of it in the back. Jesus, we said, this was pointing towards Jesus. The old law was pointing towards Jesus. And Jesus took care of the sins of all people. How we can describe or explain that is that if you've ever bought something on credit before, how many of you have ever bought something on credit? Just a couple of us? Okay, I was going to say, statistics say that like 77% of Americans are in credit card debt. And so I was going to say, only like 4 of us in here? Okay, we're beating the odds. That's great. When you buy something on credit, have you bought that? Let's say you go to the store and you say, I'm going to buy a new sofa. Have you bought the sofa? You really haven't bought the sofa yet. Who bought the sofa? Visa, MasterCard, your bank. They bought the sofa. They're saying, we're going to give you the money. You can enjoy the sofa. You can take it home with you, but you haven't bought it yet. When have you bought the sofa? When the debt's paid. So let's take this to the Old Testament and versus the New. This is what we were discussing at the very end of class on Wednesday night. Was there salvation? I believe so. I believe there was salvation. We have instances all throughout the Old Testament and the New talking about the salvation of the Old Testament stories and the Old Testament, I don't want to call them characters, but people. But when was the debt paid? When Christ died. And that's what the Hebrew writer is trying to say. Did the blood of bulls and goats take away the sins of the people? No. Does that mean they didn't have salvation? No, they had their salvation. And I quoted lots of instances of that on Wednesday night. However, the debt was paid when Jesus died on the cross. That's what the Hebrew writer is trying to point there. But again, you see that same point remains. The old law was pointing towards and guiding these people towards one thing. It was Jesus. It's been Jesus all along. And that's where we said the new covenant wasn't a completion, was a completion, not a fix. Nothing in the old law had to be fixed, but it was completed. Just like, remember we started this with an illustration several weeks ago. If you've ever been to a play, there's two acts in the same play. Still one play, two very different acts. And when you get back from intermission to the second act of the play and it starts concluding everything, you don't forget about everything that happened in the first, because the first act is driving you towards what's going to happen in the second act. And that's what the Old and New Testament are like. And that's a very base analogy there, but it just kind of helps me understand that this was the purpose of the Old, to drive us towards what's going on in the New. Jesus even says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, I did not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill. What does that word fulfill mean? To complete it. What's he completing? What was started so long ago? Jesus came to fulfill each and every single one of those prophecies. And it's an amazing feat. I read one time that and I shared the statistic before, I believe, but for one person in all of history to fulfill only 8 prophecies from the Old Testament, just 8 of them, and there are over 250 messianic, about Jesus, messianic prophecies, but to just complete 8 prophecies, it would be similar as if you take $0.50, about that big, a $0.50 coin, and you fill the state of Texas up to 2 feet high of $0.50. And on one of those $0.50, you put a big red X and throw it out in the middle somewhere in the state of Texas. And then we take a blindfolded person. We say, buddy, we're going to blindfold you. You go out in the state of Texas and you go find the one silver dollar that has the red X on it. That's the same odds. The same odds that Buddy has to find the one silver dollar with the red X in the state of Texas, of silver dollars 2 feet high, are the same odds that one person in history can fulfill only 8 Old Testament prophecies. And yet Jesus did more than that on the day of his crucifixion. That's why I believe he says, it is finished, in the book of John. No one else could do what Jesus did. The same person that wrote those statistics on fulfilling 8, someone said, what about 48? And it was 1 in 100 trillion, trillion, trillion. I think there was like 14 trillions or something like that. And they said, well, what about 148? And the guy said, we can't do math that high. And yet Jesus has fulfilled all of them, except a couple, which we've talked about in this class as well. We're still waiting on a few of those prophecies to be fulfilled. Jesus is coming back to take us home. Heaven will be here. But still, the plan, the old covenant, and everything it's been pointing towards is finished. Jesus has fulfilled. Just to finish up this section before we get on to what's new, you look in the book of Galatians, chapter 3, verse 29, just to illustrate how far back this plan goes and how Jesus has fulfilled it. It says, if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Talking about how you and I, even if when we have been baptized into Christ, we are Christ. That's what verses before it says. And those people that have been baptized into Christ here in the New Testament time period, we become Abraham's seed. It goes all the way back to the very beginning of the plan, that we belong to Abraham's seed. We're heirs according to the promise. Well, what promises are made to Abraham? Well, we're part of the great nation of God's people, the great seed of Jesus Christ and the promised land of heaven. It says we're heirs according to that promise, just like Abraham received, just like the children of Israel received. You and I have those promises as well. And so, why the New Testament? Why did the New Testament have to come? Jesus fulfilled, like we've already talked about, the most important aspects of the law of Moses, and we'll get into this in the next section as well. But he became our perfect sacrifice, as 1 Peter tells us. He was obedient to the Father. He will say, as he's contemplating and predicting his death, Jesus says, now my soul is troubled, what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? But for this purpose I have come to this hour. He's saying, should I ask God to save me? Why would I do that when this is the reason I've come? He was continually obedient to the will of the Father. And of course, we know while he was praying, he said, not my will, but your will be done. He was the ultimate fulfillment of love to the world. John 3:16. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. Jesus had to be part of that plan. Jesus wouldn't have come if he hadn't loved as well. And he brought salvation, as it says in Romans 10, verse 13. So you look at all this, and okay, well, here's the old, we had to have the new. And you look at what New Testament writers had to say about some of these things. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 1. We were in Hebrews a lot on Wednesday night. The law, having a shadow of the good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never, with these same sacrifices, which they offer continually year by year, make those who approach perfect. That's kind of what we've talked about. The law of the old cannot fulfill making people perfect. But one person can. Jesus. But the Hebrew writer says there in this first verse of chapter 10, the law having a shadow of the good things to come. What does that mean? Okay. And we'll see this again here in just a minute when we talk about, well, then why not get rid of the old? In your English classes, when you were in school, or if your kids are in school, there's a lot about foreshadowing. What does it mean to foreshadow something? I know, we got to go back to high school English, and that's bad memories for a lot of people. I liked my English teachers, but the hint of things to come. So, I'll take one of my favorite movies, Star Wars. There's a certain line in most Star Wars, I think all Star Wars, where someone says, I've got a bad feeling about this. When that's said in a movie, what's your gut starting to tell you? Man, it's about to go down, right? I've got a bad feeling about this. Or one example I saw was if you've got a group of kids that says, hey, do you want to go out and do this? You want to go explore the woods? Sure, I just have to be home by dinner. What's that foreshadowing? Yeah, you're not making it home for dinner. Something's going to happen, right? And so there's something that's said or done that's foreshadowing. It's a shadow of what's to come. And the Hebrew writer even said, this is the shadow of the good things to come. The law had its place, and it was good. But it was never meant to be the eternal fix. It was to tell of the greater things to come. That is Jesus, the one that could take away our sins. In Colossians chapter 2, another New Testament writer, Paul says, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Christ. So again, talking about the old law, it was a shadow of things to come, but Christ is the substance. It's always been about Jesus. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 talks about this as well, about the law of Moses and what those children of Israel did, as we'll see in just a moment, that they're there for our learning. Galatians 4:24 talks about how the old law versus the new law is just like back in the patriarchal days, Hagar versus Sarah. Was there anything wrong with Hagar? No, God blessed Hagar and Ishmael's descendants. But the law was always pointing towards Sarah and the descendants from her. And there's places all through the New Testament that talk about how the old law was pointing towards that to come. Was it broken? Not in any of the New Testament writers' eyes. But they did say that Jesus is the fulfillment. It's always been pointing towards Jesus. Anything before we kind of conclude that and get to this next question, then why even keep the old? If we have a new, why keep the old? Anything before we kind of skip to this? Okay. There's a story of a man, and I do something similar, and maybe you do too. But there's a story of a farmer who, he lived a very modest life, and all he owned, clothes-wise, was really just two pairs of overalls. And he had a junky pair that he would wear out in the fields all day while he worked his land, and then he had a nice pair that was really only worn one day a week, and that was to services on Sunday. But he had his nice church pair, and then he had his work pair. And when his work pair got too worn out to wear anymore, the buckles broke or holes started to form, he would go out and buy a brand new pair of overalls, the same overalls, and he would just kind of move them down the line. He'd get rid of the one that has holes in it and his work pair. His nice pair became his new work pair, and his brand new pair became his new church pair. And that's just how he lived his life. It's a true story. The man in Indiana that did that. I'm like that with shoes, with tennis shoes. I have two pairs of tennis shoes. I've got several shoes for while I'm at the office and church and things like that, but only two pairs of tennis shoes. And that's because after I'm done with one pair, they become my work pair. I wear them when I paint things around the house, when I do yard work, and they're just kind of my trashy shoes. And then my new pair is kind of the ones I wear when I go out or when I'm out in public because I don't want people to see my trashy shoes. But when those are too bad, I throw those out. Or if I get a new pair, my new pair becomes my nice ones, and they just keep going down the line. I'll probably always do that. We have something in our minds. Remember, we looked at how on Wednesday night, when something new comes along, we have to have what's new. Right? We illustrated that with Apple's iPhone. As soon as a new iPhone comes out, people are standing in lines for hours just to get the new iPhone, even though they have the one that came out just before it. We've all been there, done that, probably. When something new and better comes, we have to have it. However, there's also something else which illustrates this point. We get rid of the old. I'll remember when I got that PlayStation. I had just bought it, and it wasn't too long after PlayStation 2 came out. Remember that story I told you on Wednesday night? To get PlayStation 2, guess what I did? I sold my PlayStation 1 to get some money to put towards the PlayStation 2. We just do that as a society. With something new comes out, we get rid of the old. In fact, this kind of blew me away. I found these statistics that are just interesting. There's a website called Statistic Brain, and in 2016, it's estimated that the weekly revenue made from garage sales, is $4.2 million in this country. That means on average, every week in this country, $4.2 million is exchanging hands at garage sales. Is that amazing? It's become a million-dollar industry. Because we have this mindset of, when I don't need it anymore, what do? We get rid of it. And in this country, we sell it at garage sales. Some countries don't even do that. Man, sometimes in my house, you know, Brooks, she does not like clutter. And so sometimes it's just, get it gone. And sometimes it doesn't even make it to a garage sale pile. And it's just, get rid of it. Give it to somebody, get it out of my house, we want it gone. And that's just kind of how we do it. But it's because when we don't need it, we get rid of it. And so what's happened is we get to this old New Testament mentality and we put those labels on it, old versus new. Well, the new, we understand we're New Testament Christians. But the Old Testament, well, we don't really need that. And a lot of Christians today can't answer why, even though we're New Testament Christians, why we still have the Old Testament. Why did we keep it? Why is it still there? Because we're not Old Testament Christians. We're from the New Testament. And so we have to understand that although, yes, the Old Testament pushed us forward to something, which you and I are now in, the New Testament, there's still a lot of value in something like the Old. And it even gets into a deeper issue of some things that we've talked about as we conclude this section of our study. Remember, we looked at how there's so many people today that want to use the Old Testament to argue certain points, or they'll bring up, if you're a New Testament Christian, you know, why aren't you can still eat shellfish? You can eat pig when the Old Testament says not to. Remember, we looked at some of those arguments. So why keep it if it's just going to create further problems? And a lot of people struggle with some of these questions on why keep this old when we already have the new. This is for me personally. We could spend tons of time talking about all the reasons that we've kept the old. Some are scriptural, some are just personal. But I believe, to me, there are four main reasons that I have seen. And again, you might be sitting there thinking, Well, here's another reason, and here's another reason. We could probably, if I open this up to an open discussion, we can probably come up with a huge list of reasons why we still have the Old Testament. I'm going to share with you just a couple of them. Again, some are scriptural, some are just logical. Here's what it helps us do. And I think these are the reasons when we look at why have the old, when we have the new, helps us understand a little bit better why we have those things. The first reason I want to suggest to you is the old is when we learn really who God is. Here's what I mean by that. There are a lot of people, as we looked at in one of the very first classes of this course, of this study, a lot of people that will say they have faith in God, but really have no idea who He is. Someone give me an example of knowing somebody, but having no idea who they are. Can someone give me an example of that to help kind of illustrate what I'm talking about? How many of you know who Nick Saban is? I know a lot of people are, well, tensions are a little high, I know, right? A lot of people know who Nick Saban is. If you are not from the state of Alabama or were not born and raised here, Nick Saban is the head football coach of Auburn University. I'm kidding. I know better. That was a joke. They wish. Of Alabama, University of Alabama. Okay. So a lot of people know Nick Saban. How many of you know Nick Saban? Any of you ever sat down with him? Had a conversation? But you know Nick Saban is real, right? You've seen him on TV. You have the evidence, the substance, that Nick Saban is a real person. So you know Nick Saban. But why don't you know Nick Saban? You don't have a relationship. You might know some things about him. Some of you might know his family's names. You might know his wife's name. You might know some of his favorites. You know his coaching history. You know some details. Still no relationship with him. What I'm talking about here when I say the reason we have the Old Testament is because it helps us learn who God is. It's one thing to know that there is a God and believe that there is a God. It's a completely different thing to really study and understand and know who that God actually is. And there are tons of things we can talk about, but I want to start at the beginning. Genesis 1:1. This is just an example. Genesis 1:1. Someone repeat that verse to me. Okay. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. I think just from the very first verse of the Bible, you get to know exactly who God is. And I kind of broke it down into three different colors there. I know two of those colors look similar. They didn't on a computer screen, but they do there. But you have the very first words in the Bible, in the beginning, God. What does that tell you about God? He's been here. That in the beginning, see, remember the word beginning, that's in our minds. Moses, a human being, was sitting there writing these words. At least that's who it's believed wrote the book of Genesis. Writing these words in the beginning of what? Well, the beginning of that existence of what we know our world to be as we walk through Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. In the beginning, God, He was there. Which means before this world began, who was there? God. Can we comprehend that? I don't think fully. I can't. Man, Landon asks some questions sometimes I just don't know the answer to. And he asked me a question the other day. He said, where did God come from? Man, I don't know. But I know that based on what scriptures tell us, in the Old Testament, God was there from the beginning. We learned something about God in the first four words of the Bible. Then there's that fifth word, in the beginning, God created. What does that tell you about who God is? Everything that we have. Now this verse goes on to explain what was created. But whatever this book is about to tell us what was created, and we know the story, right? Through the days of creation, God was the one that was responsible. It tells us that He's the creator. And you and I are only part of the created. It tells us who's in charge. It tells us God has the authority here in His creation. And what did He create? But there's the heavens and the earth. Everything around us was created by God. So you see, even just in the first verse of the Bible, you're learning who God is. not just that there is a God, but who He is, what He's capable of, how long He's been here. That the same God you and I have today is the same God that created the heavens and the earth. I loved what one person said about this. He says, that's just the first verse of the Old Testament. Can you imagine what you can learn about God in the other 23,144 verses of the Old Testament? But in the first verse, you have that said about God. What does the rest of them have to say? Here's just a few. Why we have the Old Testament? We learn that God is a merciful and gracious, long-suffering God who's abounding in goodness and truth from the book of Exodus. We learn that God is good and upright from the book of Psalms. We learn that God is righteous in all of His ways. We learn that there is no one is holy like the Lord in 1 Samuel. We learn that He's a just God from the book of Psalms. We learn that He loves His people. And the list can go on and on and on. Why do we have the Old Testament still? Because it starts to teach us who God is. We learn about the God of not just the Old Testament, not the New Testament. They're not two separate people. We learn about the God of this universe, the one true and almighty God. That's not something to take lightly. That all these stories that we think of as the Old Testament, that are outdated from people thousands of years ago, it's not just a story about other people. It's a story about who God is and what He's done for His people. We also learn, I think reason number two, we learn about God's pattern. We had a whole class on this. You have the slides in your packet. They're also online. You can go listen to that again online, that same class, that God has a pattern. I want you to think for just a moment. If you're into art, I'm not a huge art person, but I know some people are. And if you're into art, you can almost look at a certain painting and know who the artist is. Famous example is Picasso, right? You just throw some colors and eyeballs on a piece of paper and you're pretty close to what Picasso was. But you know, looking at Picasso, that's a Picasso. And there are people that love art and they say, oh, that's a name of famous artist. Same with music, if you're into music. A song can start playing and before the words even come out, you don't even know, you may have never heard the song before. It might be a brand new track, but you know, that sounds... For me, it's the Beach Boys. I know when the Beach Boys, it's a Beach Boys song, for the most part. Just they have that sound. They have a pattern that they've put in place. This is us. This is who we are. This is our sound. This is our style. God's the same way. And when you start looking at God through scriptures, here's His pattern. And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but God's pattern from the very beginning has been, since Adam and Eve, if you obey my commandments, what am I going to do? I'm going to bless you. I love my people. And if you obey me, I'm going to take care of you. There will be salvation. That's why we've gone over those themes over and over and over again. You see God's pattern of love portray itself over and over and over. That even in His anger with Adam and Eve casting them out of the garden, He gave them clothes to cover themselves. There's love there. And that it's a pattern that is set from the very beginning. You see God's pattern of sacrifice, His pattern of obedience, what He expects out of His people, of the salvation that He continues to offer His people. You see that pattern set in place. Well, guess what? That pattern doesn't stop just because we have a New Testament. It doesn't mean we get to throw out the old. That if there was a pattern being set in place throughout how many years of the Old Testament, what do you think is going to continue on in the New? The same pattern, which we've already discussed. So that's why we're not spending too much time on this. But you see that pattern come into place. I think reason number three, we have the Old Testament. We learn of others' faith. I think some of the most encouraging moments that I've had in my life, spiritually, have been from listening to other people. That's why I love what we do at this congregation. And if you're visiting with us, bear with me for just a moment. But at this congregation, when we have those services, like our Thanksgiving service, our reflection service at the end of the year, when we get some guys up here to just tell us their story, we can call it testimony if we want, I don't know. But it's just a time where we get to just hear about other people's faith, about their struggles, about their strengths, about where they found their strength. It's encouraging to us. I think that's why we continue to do it, because the feedback we've gotten for the last several years is people like these services, because it's encouraging to us to hear of other people's faith. But isn't that what the Old Testament is? A story of all these people that have been there, done that, that have shown their faith in God and where it's gotten them, that have shown their obedience and what God has done for them, or has shown the other side of it, their lack of faith and the consequences for it. You go to Hebrews chapter 11, and you have stories of Abel, who offered to God a more excellent sacrifice, of Enoch, who was taken away so that he did not see death, of Noah, who prepared an ark for saving of his household, for Abraham, who was tested and offered up Isaac, for Isaac, who blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come, for Jacob blessed each one of his sons, the sons of Joseph, in worship. For Joseph made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. Moses was hidden for 3 months, forsook Egypt, and kept the Passover. The children of Israel passed through the Red Sea. The walls of Jericho fell down. The harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe. The Hebrew writer said that time would fail me to tell you of in verse 32. And then he mentions more Old Testament characters like Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel. He said even women received dead raised to life again. Even the New Testament writer, the Hebrew writer, said, look at back at the Old Testament. It's a story of faith for all these characters. It should be encouraging to us. And that's what the point of Hebrews was, to encourage those writers, or those readers, to continue on in their faith. Remember what we said the problem in Hebrews was? They were abandoning Christianity, their faith in Christ, to go back to Judaism. Why do you think the Hebrew writer brought up all these instances from the Old Testament? But to say, look at all these people that had their faith in God. Look where they ended up. By faith, they were able to do all those things we just listed. They received their promises, the text tells us. You and I have the same promises to us, made to us. You and I will be at Mount Zion one day, Lord willing, if we keep the faith. And it's because of stories like this that we get to learn from other people's faith. New Testament writers like Paul in 1 Corinthians 10 said, now these things became our examples, talking about Moses and some things they did there. These things became our examples to the intent that they should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Just the idea that there are examples. Why do we continue to talk about what happened years ago in the Old Testament? Because they're examples to us. A few verses later in verse 11, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. Or our encouragement, some of your versions might say. The Old Testament is full of stories and testimonies of real people's faith in God. And when we can remember that these were real people in real circumstances, it's not a book of fiction, but this is reality, it puts a little bit more weight into what the Old Testament has to offer us. And lastly, so that was the first bell, so I know people will be coming up here. We learn the reason why. We learn the reason why so many things happen the way they did. I'm going to just throw these up on the screen because these are things we have talked about, but we're just concluding this part of the service. You look at the things from the old, and they're pointing, they're guiding us towards the new. That you look at the Passover, if you were in my class last quarter upstairs when we talked about that last week of Jesus' life, that whole idea of the Passover and the lamb and the blood and the unleavened bread, it's constant throughout what Jesus was trying to do. It's constant in what we do every first day of the week with the blood and the bread. That Jesus was the fulfillment of the Passover and the Passover lamb. He was our lamb. You look at the tabernacle and the temple of the Old Testament, God, it was a symbol that God was with his people. Well, God was with his people in the new, wasn't he? How was God with his people in the New Testament? I could have just put Jesus again, but I wanted to just make it look a little different on the slide. Jesus, he literally was God, came to be with man, as we read about in John chapter 1. Looking forward to heaven, in Revelation 21, it says the tabernacle of God will be with man. He will be their God. They will be his people. Again, we learn why these things. why do we have to sit through the book of Exodus and talk about the tabernacle? It's so boring when we read about this has to be a span and 20 cubits and this. And the high priest, they have to wear this and they have to do this. And the sacrifices, like we say, it's so boring. Well, yeah, some of it is boring to read. But it's exciting when you see that God had a reason why. That there was a plan put into motion from the very beginning. And Jesus, you can read through the Old Testament. I guarantee you now, if you've never done this, do it now. Go read through some of those boring sections and put Jesus into every scripture, and you will find a way to do it. Because it was pointing towards him the whole time. You have Noah, the Red Sea, Naaman, all saved through water. It's just amazing that when you look at the Old Testament from a New Testament lens, you start seeing things a little differently, don't you? But there's a reason why behind it. Okay, so that concludes... I got it just in time. That concludes the first half of this study. And I'm going to throw this up on the screen there just so you can see where we have been. We've looked at how we're all on a journey. We're building the blueprint of God, building the castle. What my faith is. We have to understand our Bible. The two testaments, one message. Why do we need a new? Why keep the old? So that's more the technical side. And I told you from the very beginning, if you just bear with us through the first half of this study, we're going to get somewhere. And so this is where we're going. Now that we understand my faith, we understand the word that God has given us and what it means in my life, how do we use it? That's the key. I've got tons of cookbooks on my shelf. Brooke's really good at cooking and baking. There's a lot of things in those cookbooks. Even though I have them, I don't know what to do. And if we're not careful, that's what the Bible becomes. It becomes another book on our shelf or on our coffee table. We have the book. I understand the book. I just don't know how to use it. And that's the whole back half of what we're going to talk about. So we're going to talk about how to start using the Bible. More than just the simple answer of, let's read our Bibles a little more. That's great. But man, how do we use it once we're reading it? What is this book all about in my life? So we've looked at people from 2,500 years ago. What about me today? And how do I use it in my life? How do I build my spiritual life? Two different things, as we'll look at in the next couple classes. Are all Christians created equal? Might be a tough class for some people, for myself included. Are all Christians created equal? Just because we say we're followers of Christ, we love Jesus, love God, does that make me a follower of Christ? And we'll look at some things at the Bible. Again, our goal here is what the Bible has to say, not what Kevin thinks. Using the Bible in my church. Some of you had to make a choice to come to Marion Street on your own. Some of you are here because mom and dad have been here all along. You've never had to make the decision on where to go find a church, to have a church family. But how do we use the Bible to go and look for a church? And now that we are members at Marion Street, most of us here tonight, how do we use the Bible to guide us where we're going as a congregation, to tell us what to do in a worship service, in Bible classes, all those things? How do we use the Bible in my church? The idea of don't be persuaded. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to tell us differently than what we think and what we believe. But remember our number one goal. I don't care what other people think. I care what God has said. There's a big difference. Not what people think, but what God has said. Using my faith to reach others. And then lastly, is my faith strong enough? That last question is one I think 90% of people have to deal with. We have the faith, but is it strong enough? And I'm here to tell you, and I'll tell you now, even though it's a couple weeks before we get there, it's probably strong enough. The reason it's weak is because we have doubt, just like the apostles did. But when we can believe in what we've talked about up until this point, your faith is going to be stronger for it. So that's where we're headed. If you have any questions along the way, feel free to come talk to me or the elders or anybody else. We'll be happy to answer some questions, but I hope that as now we've kind of closed the door on the beginning and we move into something else, we can get excited and start moving forward. Any thoughts or comments before people start coming up the stairs? Yeah. Yeah. Why do I preach from it? Why is it in here? If we're not followers of this, why do we all have it in our Bibles? Yeah. Anything else?